Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Panchadashi is Panchadashi. Pancha means five, dasha means ten. So Panchadashi is that which has 15. It means 15 chapters. The Panchadashi. It's written by Vidyaranya, who was actually, forgets which mutt it was. He was a Shankaracharya in around the 14th century, the late 14th century, 1380s or something like that. And so his, for me, I don't think he's ever gone through this, the whole Panchadashi, but there's certain chapters in it that are really good, and he's often taught chapter 1, chapter 7, chapter 10, and chapter 15. And then these others, it's so thorough that if you've been exposed much to this vision and other Prakarana Granthas, this will just expand on that, because, usually a Prakarana Granta will do everything will cover what's in this 15 chapters in brief, because the whole vision is here. He just expands it quite a bit and brings in really interesting tidbits and expands your vocabulary. It expands your, puts into writing a lot of the subtleties of these prakriyas, a lot of the logics. You know, the prakriyas are these teaching methodologies which we went through briefly in the Tattvabodha, like for instance this Avastavtraya Sakshi, the one who's the witness of the three states of experience, waking, dream, and deep sleep. He's starting out really with that as kind of a praise of the and a extolling of the nature of the self. He's using a prakriya to do that, but he also brings in a certain thoroughness and some different types of logic, which will be nice for us to see. So it's a major text that's really part of the Sampradaya as far as the what we call Prakarana Granthas, is the explanatory text that we teach along with the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Brahma Sutras. So it's a good one to have. It's a good one to study on your own, all these missing chapters that may not. I think I'm pretty sure that Paramarthananda has taught the whole Panchadashi. I think that he taught Mananda, may have taught it also. So it is there on tape somewhere. I don't, to my knowledge, if Swamiji's done it, I don't have that tapes. Anyway. So as usual, the first verses are prayer verses, usually the first one or two verses. There are prayer verses, and they are also, they're called the Mangala Charanam, where you're asking for Bhagavan's grace, for Bhagavan's grace, for the grace of your Ishtadevata, for the grace of your teacher, acknowledging, doing pranams to your guru. And because of your guru, you have this knowledge now. And your guru, if he's writing anything, he will do the same. Because of his guru, he will have this knowledge now. And even to come to your guru, you require so many blessings from Bhagavan. So you do the pranams to Ishwara, to your Ishtadevata, to your guru, and keep the sampradaya going like that. So sometimes in one text that actually worked on the Hastamalika, the Hastamalakiya Bhasha, Shankara wrote a Bhasha on Hastamalika's 10 or 12 verses. He was one of Shankara's students, one of his disciples, and he was really young. Shankara, maybe he was only 8 years old or something. And Shankara, his parents were worried about him because he never spoke. You know. And so Shankara, they took him to Shankara. Shankara was passing through the town, and they asked him my boy never speaks, and so Shankara, they don't talk, and something's the matter. One Shankara's blessings to help him. So he asked Hestal Malika, he said, "Who are you?" Anyone get a comment? Who are you? And Hestal Malika came out with these 12 verses, and each one is a Mahavakya. And Shankara liked it so much that he wrote a commentary on, as the story goes. So, anyway. And in that commentary, in the first verses, there is no real prayer verse, you know? And so Shankara writes in this commentary for the first verse, he brings up an objection. And the objection is, this work really shouldn't be studied by anyone in the tradition because it is not starting with any type of prayer or acknowledgement of the Guru, of the Ishwara. There's no prayer verse there. And so Shankara has to refute that so that it can be, this text can be honored in the tradition. So what he says is, even if the prayer is not there in the verse, it doesn't mean that Hestal Malika did not make a prayer. The prayer can be manasa, it can be mental, it can be a mental prayer, it can be vachika, it can be a prayer through words, it can be also through the physical body, you know. And so that was his argument, that don't think that he did anything wrong. He didn't do anything. Please study this too. So here, in this case, we have it. So, do you have the swara to this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want it to be a certain one.
Oh, you want it to be a certain one?
Oh, tell me. I'll let me see.
Namah Shri Shankaranam.
That's it.
That's it?
Yeah. That's because that's when it's from Jesus.
Oh,
yeah, that's
okay.
Ratamodhyayah
Tattva-vivekah
Namah Shri Shankarananda
Namah Shri Shankarananda
Gurupadambujammane Savilasamahamoha
Graha-grasaika-karmane
One more, yeah.
Tatpadambuluhat-vandva
Seva-nirmala-cetasam
Sukha-bodhaya-tattvasya
Viveko-yam-vidhiyate
So, namaha. Can you repeat after me? Namaha.
Namaha.
Shri.
Shri. Shri.
I could do more words than that. Okay. Shri Shankara Ananda.
Shri Shankara Ananda.
Guru Padam.
Guru Padam.
Actually, it's Guru Pada. Let's do like this. Guru Pada.
Guru Pada.
Ambujanmane.
Ambujanmane.
Savilasa.
Savilasa
Mahamoha
Mahamoha
Graha
Graha
Grasa
Grasa
Eka Karmane
Eka Karmane.
So he starts with Namaha, salutations. Namaha will always govern the dative case, the fourth case. So here at the first Namaha, it goes with this long compound. So this Shri Shankarananda Guru. Guru is his teacher. The name of Vidyaranya's teacher is Shankarananda. And then the Shri is respect. So Shri Shankarananda Guru. Okay. So, and now what? Pada means feet. Ambujanmane is lotus. This is in the dative singular. So it would be my salutations. Reading the compound, you can often read a compound from the back forward to the beginning. To the pada ambujanmane, to the lotus feet. So often in so many verses and prayers that when we pranam to the when we pranam to the Guru, we say we're pranaming to his feet, which are like lotuses, to his lotus feet. So that's very common in the tradition. So namaha, salutations to the lotus feet of my teacher, of my Guru, Sri Shankarananda. I'll tell you more about the meaning of that, but that's his name, that's his name, Shankarananda. Sri is respect. Then he says, Savilasa, Mahamoha, Graha, Grasa, Eka, Karmane. So now he gives a title, a behuver. He defines what his job is, what his main job is, of his Guru. He says, Eka Karmane. Karma means his karma. If you say Eka Karmane, his primary act or his soul act, activity, his soul activity, it might be, in English to translate it, might work as his sole purpose. A sannyasi, the guru, what is the guru's purpose? Really is shravana manana nididhyasana, to be teaching, to teach. That's the sole purpose, really. That's the primary purpose of a sannyasi. So who is the teacher, the one who teaches this knowledge in order to remove the ignorance. So he says his eka, his sole purpose, or his sole activity, this is what he does. He just spends his day teaching his teachers. Okay. So his sole purpose, eka karmane, soul activity, is what? His karma is grasa, swallowing, to swallow the graha. The grahas are like large sea animals. And so, but when we use graha, we means like sharks or alligators, you know, or the crocodile. The ones that are so frightening and can cause so much pain to you, like a bite from a shark. So the one whose purpose, or one who spends all of his time swallowing the great shark of Mahamoha. Mahamoha means the great moha, the great delusion. And so when we take delusion, that grand delusion, the moha, confusion, moha also means the great, huge confusion. But that maha moha, we usually take back to the avidya, the original avidya. What does he say is the word for it? What's here? Yeah, that's what I wanted. Maha moha means mula ajnana. This is a technical term. It means the mula is the root, like the root of a tree is the mula. So here, that root ignorance, the mula ajnanam. Swamiji uses this also, so I want you to remember this, like mula ajnanam. It means the root ajnanam, which is self-ignorance. That's the ignorance of all ignorance. Everything, all your experiences, all of your knowledges, all of your emotions, everything that's kind of ruling your life and your attitude toward the world is this root ajnanam, this fundamental ajnanam, which has to do with self-ignorance. Because here you can be removing ignorance, you have so much ignorance, but we go along and removing this little bit and this little bit. But this mula ajnanam, this root ignorance, remains, because I have no pramana to remove it. Until I become a mumukshu and the Upanishads, where that teaching methodology comes into play, so that you can see yourself, recognize yourself, gain that aparoksha jnana, that direct immediate knowledge of yourself. So this maha moha is this root mula ajnanam. Sa vilasa, together with its manifestation. Its manifestation is the whole creation. The vilasa means that which comes into manifestation, that which manifests, that which appears is vilasa. Sa means saha vilasa. So removes that root ignorance along with its manifestation. For us, when you're still alive, what we mean by removing it is not that as long as you have the upadhi, you gain knowledge and boom, it's gone. Yeah. When that ignorance is gone, then the universe is gone too. No, it becomes mithya. The whole universe becomes mitya. As long as you have the prarabdha karma, the karmas which are now taking you through this life, therefore you have this body and you have your mind and your sense organs, they continue being made of sattva. They continue to reflect this body mindset, to reflect consciousness. To kind of think about that, to understand that for Ishwara, who has no ajnanam, for Ishwara, for the Lord, there's no ignorance. You know, because he has the whole Maya under his control in that sense. He's not identified with any limitation whatsoever. So the Maya for Ishwara, it just uses one of its two capacities, which is vikshepa. That's the vilasa. The whole vilasa, the whole universe becomes and appears and disappears. Appears is maintained and goes into resolution. But when it appears as Ishwara, Brahman with Maya is Ishwara. So when it's not there, Maya is in unmanifest condition, but cyclically it comes into manifestation. So it appears. But from Ishwara's standpoint, because there's no identification with anything about the appearance, that's mityatva is a given, because I know myself. And so for Ishwara, there is no ajnanam, there's just the appearance, the vikshepa. Remember the vikshepa. But for all of the jivas, that vikshepa, what is vikshepa? What is maya, vikshepa, projection? The appearance of the creation for Ishwara is the cause of ajnanam for the jiva. And that ajnanam is called avaranam. It, as though just the upadi and the situation that you, the limitation of the upadi and the situation you find yourself in, this mind that enjoys consciousness without knowledge. Right? It has consciousness because of the sattva. So it has the experience of being a conscious being without having any understanding at all, really, of what that consciousness is in its own right. If it's something that comes from this body, you know, and therefore it will go, what comes with the body, it goes with the body. Or is it something that belongs to the mind and then therefore transmigrates with the subtle body? You know, what is the relationship of my consciousness to your consciousness? There's all total ajnanam, ignorance surrounding the whole thing. This is important. It's surrounding the whole self-experience of me. There is aparoksha. The nature of yourself is aparoksha. It's swata siddha. Aparoksha means it doesn't require, it's not indirect. I don't have an indirect experience. No, I'm not talking about knowledge now. There is no indirect experience of myself. Just imagine that. Nor can I look at myself as an object. Therefore, my self-experience is aparoksha. But this aparoksha me, you know, from the standpoint of the mind, is shrouded, is covered as though with ajnanam. Because I am a conscious being, but that's the extent of my knowledge. It's like I see with a rope snake, I see the bends and the length of the rope without seeing the rope. So I experience this me completely, but I don't know anything about me contextually in reference to the body, mind, sense organs, or this world. And so this aparoksha jnanam has, from its own standpoint, has no problem at all. But from the standpoint of this upadi, Ishwara's upadi, the Maya upadi, no problem at all. But from the jiva upadi, because of the limitation of the mind and the sense organs and the organs of knowledge that you have, limitations that you have, this self-experience, which is aparoksha, you know, which is self-shining, you know, you don't have to, you're always the bottom line, you are always ever there, but seen from the standpoint of the mind, you don't know what that self-experience is. That's the ajnanam, that's the covering. And that ajnanam brings about, it, he likens to, you know, like the great white shark or a crocodile or something that it eats you alive, basically. Because yourself is taken to be something that is no way to get a handle on it. Because how can you even have any experience whatsoever in reality, any experience whatsoever with any type of change, any type of birth or death or change in yourself. You have experience of the change of nama-rupas that come in, name and form, that come into being and go out of being, but you have never had and never can have any experience of me changing or me not existing. And so even to try to imagine yourself as non-existing, which is a wonderful meditation, you can freely imagine everything in this creation going non-existing, because they will go into non-existence. It's easy to imagine that. It's even easy to get rid of the creation. All you have to do is shut your eyes and it's not there. You can easily pull your sense organs away from any objectifiable experience or any thought in your mind. But you can never do that for your own self. Because even when you're doing different types of meditation, you pull everything away, pull all of your externalizations away, the perceptions of the world, perceptions of your emotions, perceptions of your thought. You can bring everything in so that they're not there to be experienced anymore. So you can imagine their non-existence, but you can't ever imagine your non-existence. Because even no matter what the imagination is, even if it's an imagination of non-existence, your being is still there. And so nothing fits, nothing really works. Say you are able to imagine complete non-existence in terms of the world that you experience. You're still there illumining it. But this is wonderful. These are all prakriyas. These all become teaching methodologies to make you see the truth of this, these type of things, so that that viveka can take place. So in this text, actually, this, like our Tattvabodha, this chapter, chapter 1, Tattva Viveka Prakaranam, right? This is a prakarana, a chapter or a study of the Tattva Viveka, like Tattvabodha, of this discriminative, this ability, this discrimination of the nature of yourself. So when Vidyaranya pranams to him, he pranams to the lotus feet of his teacher, Sri Shankarananda, whose really sole job, what he spends his life doing, is swallowing up all of the sharks of ignorance. You know, all the sharks of ignorance together with the reality of the creation. He swallows that up because he's an acharya in the line of the Advaita Vedanta, a respected teacher. So, one other thing that they say in this commentary, there's some nice commentaries. I'm going to be referring to some parts of these commentaries. Because in any beginning of a text, we need to look at this Anubandha Chatushtaya. Do you remember? And we did it in Tattva Bodha also. So the Anubandha Chatushtaya are the four links, really, that a text or a teaching has to connect with you in some way for you to even become involved in it. So what are these connecting links that would cause you to want to study this text? You just don't go pick out some book out of the library and start studying it. There has to be a purpose for you. And so he gives kind of an interesting, in the commentary, For the name of Shankara, of Vidyaranya's guru, including the Shri, he says that Shankara Ananda, his guru's name is Shankara Ananda. Okay. So it says in the commentary, so if we say Shankara, it's really Shamkara. So Shamkara means Shamkaroti, the one who does or makes or gives, depending on the use of the word, the one who gives. Sham means sukha. So Shankara is the one who gives sukha, according to this. And the second part is Ananda, the one who is Ananda. So we have two. This is just some of the creativity of some of these commentaries. So we have Shankara, the one who gives Ananda, who is the maker of Ananda. That is considered to be the Paramatma, to be Brahman. Because any ananda that you gain or have has only Brahman for its source. Right? So the Shankara, the Shankara is for for Brahman as the one who really is the source of all ananda. So any ananda that you ever experience, any sukha that you ever experience, has its source only in Brahman. And for the ananda in this commentary, they say the ananda is the jivatma. And so he looks at this Shankara ananda as a mahavakya, where the ananda is the nature of the jivatma. That's the jiva. If I say jivatma, the jiva, what is the jiva? It's self-ignorance. It's the atma that is taken, that the atma which has ignorance, which brings about the ahankara and brings about this misidentification with all the upadis. That's the jivatma. So atma, yourself, with ignorance, gives rise naturally, immediately, effortlessly, to the ahankara and identification with your body, mind, sense organs. But the truth of the jiva is only ananda, the satchiratma, the satchirananda, atma. The truth of Brahman, right, of the one who is the source of all ananda, is Brahman, is the satchirananda, atma. Ananda, ananda. So both are only ananda. So the Sri Shankara, and Sri means the one who gives, that is gives, there's a lot of meanings for Sri. The last meaning they give is really beautiful. The one who blesses with this, the one who gives that blessing. So it's the Sri Shankarananda. So my guru is the one who wields this Mahavakya, which is really the Vishya, the subject matter, the Vishya in the Anubandha Chatushya. That's the Vishya of the Advaita Vedanta. It gives other things later. So, on one more, what is the purpose, the what we call the prayojana in the Anubandha Chatushtya? So you have the Vishya, the subject matter. What do you get out of studying it? What's the reason that you're going to study this? Savilasa Mahamoha Graha Grasaika Karmane. I'm studying this, I'm with this teacher. Why? Because this great white shark of ajnanam, of self-ignorance, along with the manifestation of this universe, this reality that we find ourselves to be in, is that this is the reality. So this great white shark of the Mahamoha, of this beginningless ignorance, this mula avidya, this root ignorance, you know, together with all of its problems and all of its manifestations, in order, I study this in order for that shark to be swallowed. May my guru, that's his purpose, that's the job of the guru, is to just swallow up all of the shark of this mula avidya. So that's the prayojana. So here, salutations. This is a really thorough salutation. It's nice. He wants to give a different level now of the prayojana, of the purpose. Because he has to give a purpose also. Not now he's just pranaming to his teacher, but he has to also give a reason for why he's writing the book. You know, what's the real reason for writing the book? So, and who is the adhikari? So let's do this next verse. The next verse. Oh, you did the two. Okay, yes. Sorry. That's it. Tet. Pada. Amburuha. Dvandva. Seva. Nirmala. Chetasam. Sukha Bodhaya.
Sukha Bodhaya.
Tatvasya.
Tatvasya
ayam viveko vivekaha ayam
vivekaha ayam
vidhiyate
amburuha or amburuha?
It's amburuha.
Amburuha.
Ru means amburuha, means to grow. Amburuha. You grow in water. Amburuha. So here, why is he writing this book? So what he says in this little commentary, this is a little commentary of the commentator, he says he wants Prithijani to, he wants to explain the beginning, why is Granta Ada the beginning of the work? Why? Before he wants to explain why he's beginning the work. Before let's see. Idani Mavantara Priyojana Katana Purasaram Granta Adam Adambam Prithijanate. He wants to tell another purpose. A secondary of Antara Priyojana. Now he wants to tell another purpose for the beginning of this work. And that will have to do with why he decided to write it in the first place. The first one, he's praying and asking that this work can take place without any vignas, without any obstructions. May it just flow and may he be able to actually bring it to completion. But now he's telling, you know, why he's decided to write the work in the first place. So here it says, Tat Pada Amburuha. So that means his lotus feet. Pada is Tat Pada. Pada is feet. Tat Pada, his feet. Then Amburuha, lotus feet. Lotus. His lotus feet. Tat Pada Amburuha. Dwandwa, his pair of lotus feet. Dwanda means two. Okay, so to his two, his pair of lotus feet. Seva means service. Seva here is, so seva is part of this compound. Seva nirmala chetasam. So this whole thing, tet padam buruha dwandva seva nirmala chetasam. So it ends in a genitive. So he says, for the for, we say like this, for those whose minds, cheta is antakarana, for those whose minds are pure, nirmala, for those who have pure minds. How? Why? Seva. Due to the service, the seva of the 2 feet of their guru. So, pada, two lotus feet, those whose minds have been purified by means of the seva, service to the lotus feet of their teacher, okay? Of their guru. Here's just a couple of, and so let's do the rest of it. Sukha bodhaya, for the easy understanding. Sukha can mean almost adverbial, easy. It's not happy. Easy, simple, effortless in the commentary for the effortless knowledge, for the effortless understanding of those whose minds have become pure through seva to the lotus feet of their guru. He says of his guru. That's because it's not like a group of students are all simultaneously doing seva to the guru. It's really, this is something wonderful to understand, actually. Even in terms of the teaching, you can have one student or you could have 100 students. It doesn't make any difference. It's still one student. It's that teaching is between the student and teacher, one student and teacher. Even though there may be many students, for each student, it's between the student and teacher. Any seva, and what we can look later probably at the different meanings of seva, service, that's again the relationship between the teacher and the student. So that's why the commentary puts it in the singular. Also he says, nirmala, that freedom from mala, so that freedom from impurity. So nirmala, he says, ragadi rahitam. A mind which is free of ragadvesha. Ragadvesha means these likes and dislikes. And from the likes and dislikes come all of the problems, all of the that we call capsulized by Krodha. Because of your raga dvesha, binding desires, all the other negative emotions and angst comes. It's encapsulated by the word Krodha. They usually say Krodhadi, such things as anger. So the one who is free, he's the one who has vairagya. You know, one of the qualifications of the adhikari is first the viveka, and that viveka, that discrimination for the adhikari, for the qualified student, is there's nothing in this creation that we can say is nitya, is free from time. And that means every single experience I have and everything I take myself to be is anitya. It's time-bound. And so that's a reality. That's an experience. There's not much we can do about it except just yes, say yes, that's how it is. There is no experience that is not time-bound. And therefore, if I'm looking for or trying to achieve any lasting state of ananda, where I can say, now everything that is to be done by me has been done, all is well, that I have that alam buddhi, you know, when you have eaten enough food, it's enough, I don't want any more food, you've slept enough, alam buddhi. These are still relative, but you can understand, you don't really want anything more. You can't sleep one more hour. You can't take one more bite, you've saturated, it's over. That alam buddhi means I don't need anything. You know, maybe there's practical things, but I don't feel any need. It's always, no, it's enough, it's enough. So that's called the alam buddhi. So you can't really have that alam buddhi within duality, or if there's raga dvesha, that's not going to be there, because everything, including your states of satisfaction, are all by nature time-bound. So, that nirmala chetasam, he says, a lot of them, so for that when they gain through service to their guru, and he says there for that surface, stuti namaskara adi lakshanaya. That's interesting. The stuti means praise, holding in high regard, as opposed to what's that word? Droha, guru droha, where you're talking badly about your teacher or criticizing your teacher, your teacher does this or that kind of thing. That's guru droha. That guru stiti means that your concentration is on what is good. In terms of your guru sisha relationship, you concentrate on what is good. It's not there's all kinds of things floating around there, but where's your drishti? You know, where do you, because the reason for this is that in order for you to gain this knowledge, you know, your mind can't be sitting in the class thinking what a jerk your teacher is. Where's the shraddha? There's no shraddha. Somehow there's something gone wrong in that relationship and it's caused a lot of hurt and pain for some whatever reason. And the primary thing that we have to do when that's the case is that you have to talk to your teacher, because nobody else is going to be able to solve that problem for you. You have to be brave. You have to talk to your teacher and you have to resolve it. And if it can't be resolved, then that teacher is not going to be a teacher for you. You know, they can't, because you can't circumvent around those bad feelings. That's why what we call guru droha, it's not, we can think of that because there's you know, negative, there are teachers who abuse their sthanam, you know. And so then this thing like the talking about guru droha, saying bad things about the teacher and all of that can be kind of self-serving for the person who's abusive, you know. Okay, it's a great papa, you do any guru droha, you know, that's wrong. That's a wrong thing to do. So just be quiet about all the bad things I'm doing. We can't take it like that. We have to understand that when we talk about guru droha, it's because you have a reputable teacher. And you might have this reaction or transference and all kinds of things going on. Those things you have to be worked through. You're not going to have relationship with anybody without dealing with transference and projections and all of your insecurities, they will definitely be there. And that's the only thing you can do, speaking certainly for myself also in my own relationship with my teacher, you have to be able to talk about these things, you know, so that you can resolve them. But that's normal. But say you can't do that, and so then you're building up a whole cadre of negative emotions, negative feelings, and you have to release them, and you release them by talking to other people, but never by dealing with the situation itself. Then what happens is that that beautiful channel, that open channel between the guru and the sisha, is closed. Because how can you even listen to somebody who you're really angry at? There's a wonderful there's a story that I really like that Samaji would tell sometimes. Because say this one, I guess Krishna had a devotee, and all this devotee, this is what he did all 24 hours a day, whenever he was in a waking state. Krishna did this, and then he did this. I don't know why he did that. Why isn't he acting like this or doing this or that? What on earth is the matter with him? He spent all of his time in this mode, complaining, thinking he could have done this better, and why did he choose to do that? Never thinks about anything else at all. And so somebody said something to Krishna, and he said, all he ever does is complain about you. He said, I know, he's my greatest devotee because he never thinks about anybody else. He only thinks about me. Who else can say that? But there's some beautiful truth in that, because he's so important that he's the center, of so much center of attention. But let this guy try to do shravana. He can be the greatest devotee, but to do shravana, his shravana is really only toward his anger and his irritation and all the things that Bhagavan has done wrong, made this mistake. So he's sitting in class and saying, there's nothing happening. So this shraddha and protection of that relationship, if you have a teacher who deserves that and is not, one of those who we should not mention working, they should be good enough, like a good enough mother. And human beings aren't perfect, but that good enough mother, where they're not a dharmic, they're doing their best, they're not going outside of the bounds of dharma, and they have their own, all of us who are humans, we have our limitations, but those limitations shouldn't be something that is harmful to that student-teacher relationship, where it becomes over the pale and just causes too much discord. So I'm not talking about that. That's why I gave that little talk the other day. So you have to remember that it's not that you're supposed to give up your viveka, give up your reasoning, just have blind confidence, even if this teacher is doing all of these outrageous things, I don't even think in Satya Yuga we should do that. In the yuga where the cow of dharma is on all four legs, you still need your discrimination. And you still need to, if you have a doubt or something is not right, you have to follow that through so you feel comfortable. And if you don't, then you should get out of there. Not safe situation. So here... When he says stuti namaskara adi lakshana, that seva has to do with shraddha. And shraddha, because namaskara, stuti, all of these things, praise, pranams and all of this require that shraddha. So that's the main seva, is that you have, the seva is one of your mind being available to that teaching so that teaching comes through. So that's the ultimate seva. It's not, bringing a lot of sticks to the teacher for the fire, That's or feeding the teacher and all these things. That's all nice and necessary just for what do you call division of jobs. Because if the teacher is busy and meeting with people and getting classes all day, then there's no time for Yusha to do all of those jobs. So everybody chips in to take care of all of the things that have to be done. But when we're really talking about the Guru Seva, it has to do with Shraddha and having your mind available for the teaching. So he says, I am Vidyate, I'm doing this book, Tattvasya Vivekaha, which concerns this, the Viveka, that is the Viveka Jnanam, means the knowledge which requires Viveka. Viveka Jnanam, it's not just any knowledge about learning about the moon or something. It's a Viveka, it's a knowledge that requires a discrimination between two things that are appearing as one. So it's called Viveka Jnanam. In order to know the reality, the truth of your being, it has to be differentiated from Maya, from Mithya, from all of the places where this false identification is taking place. Right? And so the whole teaching, Viveka Jnanam, is the knowledge, you know. It's the knowledge that that requires this discrimination between yourself and the world. And once that Viveka is made, it's a domino effect. Once that Viveka takes place and you recognize the freedom of your being from all of these, the jiva upadis, you know, the ajnanam, the body, mind, sense organs, all of the thoughts, feelings, emotions that we've identified with, let alone the subtle body and the attachment and the stula, our physical body. But once that self has been differentiated and freed from these identifications, then that self has to be the self in all beings, because you've even differentiated yourself from space. Time and space, you differentiate in this Viveka. The differentiation is complete. Means you are differentiated from the entire Maya Upadi, not just from this body. So there's a Viveka in terms of your body, mind, sense organs that has to take place. And then in the recognition of yourself, the Satchit Atma that you are, that creates a differentiation from all beings within the Maya Upadi, from Ishwara himself. There has to be that differentiation, because the Satchit Atma, yourself, is not an object that exists within the creation, that exists within time and space when Viveka takes place. It's something that frees yourself initially just from the body, mind, sense organs. But upon analysis, you know, and completing that Viveka Jnanam, there is you and this Mithya creation. You might as well just say there is Ishwara. There is the one non-dual self, me, which has for its upadi, for its conditioning adjunct, Maya. You know, we don't call it Maya Upadi exactly, because Upadi, when we use it, it brings in ignorance. So yourself, which has this, you know, incidental attribute that is natural to it, that we call Maya. That Maya has no being of its own. So all of this comes from that Viveka. So the Viveka Jnanam is the recognition that I am Ishwara, actually. And I can't be Ishwara, and Ishwara can't be me, right? I can only be Ishwara, you know, if myself, in fact, is not limited by these upadis, and also that Ishwara's upadi, means the whole conditioning agent, is not limited, does not limit the self for Ishwara. If Ishwara is really, if that's the reality of Ishwara, the reality is Ishwara, then Ishwara is Ishwara, and I'm the Satchit Atma of the Jiva. That's not what it is. It's that Ishwara has for his being the Satchit Atma, Brahman. That's the truth of the whole Maya Upadi, and that's the truth of everything in it. So the truth of me is the Satchit Atma. The truth of Ishwara is also the Satchit Atma that we call Brahman. So in the end, you can say, and should say, I am Ishwara. Because there is no, the mithya upadis can't bring about any differentiation. There's no second thing there. So these are all important. So this word, I just put a little bit of emphasis now for you on this word, Viveka. how important this word viveka is, because the whole problem that we're having has to do with aviveka, the entire problem. So when we say viveka jnanam, that discrimination has to take place. Otherwise there's no knowledge. And that's not true in the world. You get knowledge of all kinds of things. It doesn't require discrimination at all. You know, here you are studying that. Yeah. No problem. So he says, this tetvasya viveka, that we call the tetva viveka prakaranam, I've written it. Why? It is being created for the easy understanding, the effortless understanding of the students, of those whose mind has become freed of impurities through seva to the lotus feet of the teacher. So with that, he gives his reason for it. Okay. That's good for the day. Forever.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.